Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. And for those of you that this may be your first time, we welcome you as well. Well, today we have the conclusion of Dr. Jesse Turner's 400-mile walk in 40 days or so. It concluded yesterday in D.C., and he's back home now, and in a few minutes, hopefully, we're going to be able to hear from him. And what today's show is, well, actually, it's the opportunity for people to call in and ask Jesse questions about his experience, since this is all is over. And also, as I have noted previously, this was historic in that it was the second time he's done this in 5 years. I don't know if he's planning on doing it again 5 years from now, and how many of us will be around if he does. So this is also a historic moment for us to get inside his head, his emotions, and et cetera, to find out what the journey was all about for him, what he learned, what he can share with us, the whole nine yards. So, yeah, we're going to have a bang-up show. I know that's an old expression, but that's how I feel about it. So if you're ready, I want to say hi, Jesse. Hello?
Can you hear me, James?
Yes. Hi, Jesse.
How are you doing? How's everything? Nice to talk to you.
I'm doing fine and excited to be able to talk to you today. I would like to think that maybe, you know, this is the first time that we'll have a chance to get inside your head, your feelings, your emotion, and you'll be able to share all of that with the War Report crowd. That's kind of exciting for me. But anyway, Jesse, first, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, James. I'm home. I'm off my feet. I didn't do any walking today. I've been home with my wife, and I went to breakfast with my wife and my daughter. Had a wonderful day. You know, after the show, we're going to go sneak out and get some of that great pizza that they sell up here.
Okay. Jesse, I thought of this a few days ago. I'm going to treat your walk as if you were on a mission. I know you were on a mission. And today, you're going to give us a debriefing.
All right.
That's how they do it in the military. You complete your mission, now you come back and you undergo a debriefing. Let's start with, what was your mission as you defined it?
All right.
When you start.
My mission was to highlight the child abuse that is called education reform in this country, particularly in regards to high-stakes assessment. And I wanted to highlight it, bring it to the attention of the people. And I knew the people are aware of this, and I needed to go and collect their stories. And that was my mission, to collect their stories, to bring attention that this is not education reform. This is child abuse.
Would you say, and I just want to brief now because basically this is what the show is going to be about. Can you stand on the deck of the aircraft carrier like you know who did and say, mission accomplished?
No, the mission. No, James. The mission's only just begun.
That was a joke for the audience. Bush, remember, stood on the deck of the aircraft carrier, Bickle sign behind him saying, mission accomplished, and the Iraq war lasted another so many years and still going on. So that was sort of like an inside joke between Jesse and I. But go ahead, Jesse. You said it's not accomplished.
No. Only beginning, James. Only beginning. We just started. And next year, the plan is to bring 100,000, to bring 200,000 to D.C. to occupy our Capitol building, to let them know that they can't ignore us.
So, in one sense of the word, this was just a prelude to what's...
That's it. It was a scouting mission.
Okay, we do that too in the military. And you made it back alive. What can you, and this may be a totally unfair question, but can you, in a very short sentence, what's your assessment of the people's awareness? Don't make this a short sentence. Elaborate on this. Their understanding that they're being warred upon, their awareness of it, and what does it mean to them? That's a multi-part question.
All right. I found our people to be strong. I've found people fighting back and fighting back hard at every turn. Now, Malcolm X said the media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and to make the guilty innocent. And that's power because they control the minds of the masses. Well, what I found on this mission is while the media may be powerful, the minds of the masses are much more powerful and are rising.
So with the answer to the level of awareness that they're being warred upon.
Sure. James, and I walked in 2010, and I found myself explaining that they were being warred upon, that there was an attack upon childhood, that youth was being robbed, recess was being taken away, art was being taken away, music was being taken away, joy was being taken away. In 2015, they know it, they're aware of it, and they are fighting back. And I hope today to highlight five of those stories, because what I learned really on this mission was that it's the humanity, you know, and humanity is missing from the education reform policies. And we should know that. If the policies are rooted on are you below proficiency, are you at proficiency, are you above proficiency, on isolated skills, then there can be no humanity to them. So I'm telling people it's simple. It's the inhumanity, stupid.
To me, when you posted that yesterday, the day before, that was the most powerful thing you have said so far on your 400-mile journey. Also, I'll go further. It was the most powerful statement coming from you that I've heard since you and I have been friends and talking and sharing our feelings about this war. It's one of the greatest. I think I wrote back to you or a note to myself, this is and can be viewed as one of the greatest examples of man and humanity to man.
It's when people are profiting off the abuse of our children, then no man, no woman, no citizen should remain silent on this. So I have found the people who are rejecting apathy, rejecting silence, rejecting indifference, and that has empowered me. They inspired me. So yes, it's the inhumanity, stupid over and over and over again. I don't need to talk about the Common Core. I don't need to talk about NCLB. I don't need to talk about Race to the Top. I don't need to talk about their new Every Child Succeeds. What I need to do is confront them every time and say, it's the inhumanity, stupid. Tell me something. If the testing is abusive, if you believe that these high-stakes testing are abusive, you can't sell me the scam that I've been hearing. Less testing, more teaching. What does that mean? Less abuse, more teaching. You know, if these high-stakes tests, if you believe that they are abuse, then less of it doesn't change the fact that it's still abuse, so I will not be scammed.
And you will not be pacified.
Yes. I'll give you, I think we should talk about what I'm calling my inspirational moments. And my inspirational moments come from the people that I have met along the way. This is who they are. And I started off when I was at the Bat Congress. I reminded people. I like to make some biblical connections when I'm talking to people. It's just who I am. And I said, most people don't pay attention to the story of David. They do pay attention that, you know, David slew Goliath with a stone. But what people don't pay attention to is David brought five stones. So today, what I'd like to share is the five stones of my walk.
Let's go.
All right. So first, I want to talk about Sergio. Sergio is an 18-year-old Latino male from Philadelphia. And Sergio, I meet him in Camden to cross the bridge into Philadelphia with the Ben Franklin. And the Philadelphia people were wonderful. And I've got a group of 20 people walking with me across the bridge with signs and chanting. And I noticed the young man there, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him at that moment. And then we arrive at the People's Mall, where we're met by others. And at the People's Mall, it was more like a church, because people came up and they testified. And Sergio's testimony was profound, because this is something that Arne Duncan, President Barack Obama, President Bush, Senator Lamar, Alexander, our billionaires, they don't take into consideration. What Sergio begins, and he says that, well, I'm not used to talking in front of a bunch of people, but I want to tell you, and I'm going to be open with you, that my mother died in prison while she was incarcerated. My father is a drug addict, and I have lived with incarcerated parents in and out of incarceration my entire life for as long as I can remember. And I have graduated from high school. So Sergio, he tells us, he says, no one really paid attention at home whether I went to school or not. But my teachers paid attention and kept telling me that school matters. And Sergio says, I can make more money in the streets. I know that. But that would make me, I would end up like my father and my mother. And I want to be more. So in high school, I started paying attention to school. He said, I paid attention enough so that I graduated in 2015. And then Sergio makes a comment. He says, I'm not here today for me because I have graduated. I'm here for my brothers and sisters who are yet to come. In 2017, the state of Pennsylvania will make high school graduation the requirement being passed in all the Keystone tests. And Sergio said, if that were the rule now, I would not have my high school diploma. I would not have been allowed to enlist in the Marine Corps. He said, if this were now, I would not. So I'm here today. Not for me. I'm here for those who come after me. And he ended with a very simple question. He said, don't you want us to graduate? And so when Sergio was saying that, James, all I could think of is 19 states have made laws that make the high school graduation requirement passing their state mastery test And in every single one of those 19 states, the dropout rate has increased. So that's Sergio's story.
I'm sure it was a powerful experience knowing you. And that issue has come up on the War Report time and time again. I think in New York, the state of New York, there is the question of exit exam. I know about it as it relates to other states and et cetera. And you're correct. Where there has been exit exam, dropout rates have increased, and the number of seniors passing said exam, very, very low. It's equivalent to, these are my words, what New York experienced last year when they switched over to the equivalent of their Common Core testing and predicted that a huge number of students would show up as being failures. And sure enough, they did. So that's a great message from Sergio, and I'm glad you have shared it, because people are not aware that this movement to install exit exams to determine one whether or not one can graduate is afoot. And listen to what Jesse just said, and let me just say what it means. You can attend high school for 4 years. You can be an honor student even. If, depending on the state, if you don't pass the exit exam, and in some cases there are multiple parts to it, multiple subjects, three or four different subjects, if you don't pass all four, you don't graduate. And you either have to find your way back into the system so that you can eventually take the test and graduate, or you have just spent X number of years, K through 12, and not have the all-important diploma. That's inhumane.
That's the point, James. It's inhumane. We need to start asking ourselves, who these elected officials, who these billionaires, who these policymakers are, and where is their humanity? You know, we're told that this is a business kind of emphasis, and I argue with that. I don't know any businessman that owns any business anywhere that will say, what you do working for me every single day of the year does not matter. All that matters is when I give you a standardized test, that you fill in enough bubbles. I do not know one corporation, one businessman, one mom and pop. I don't know anyone that would call that the way to evaluate their employees. So this is some kind of inhumane scam, and we need to know it. It's got nothing to do with business. It's got nothing to do with justice, and it's got nothing to do with validating the lives of our young people.
Let's go on to your next.
Our next is another young man from Philadelphia. I was contacted by Mr. Ron Rice one day on Facebook, and Ron said, can you call me? And I said, yeah, I'm an open book on this walk. And so I talked to Ron, and he told me about his young son, Jake. And he said, Jake is a smart kid. He's a whip. He has passed the Keystone math. He has passed the Keystone English, but he has struggled with the biology exam, and he doesn't seem to be able to get by the biology exam. He always misses it by a couple of points. And so when Jake came there that day, so Jake is he will graduate if in 2017. So he is the brother and sister, the brother of Sergio. Jake happens to be a white middle-class Jewish kid, and Sergio was advocating for him, and Jake steps up and says the very same thing. He said, this test does not define who I am. I am smart. Graduation should not be the passing of a test. I pass my biology classes. I get A's. I do well in school. How dare they do this to me? And so Jake holds a sign. Jake stands up And that's what I'm saying, that the young people of this country, trust me, I have met them on this wall. I met them in Newark. I met the Newark Students Union. I met them in Baltimore. The young people are planning a strike. But Jake is another stone. He's another one of David's stones, because I believe that we must hit these people with their inhumanity. So Sergio's the young Latin male. Jake is the young middle-class Jewish kid. They're all in line, and they're saying, where's the humanity? And he told a powerful story. I'm not doing it justice.
Okay. So Jake and Sergio are the every student.
They're the every student. When I was on this walk, people need to know that I have met every kind of student, white, black, Latino, Asian. I have met them everywhere. And everywhere, James, everywhere I meet them, and when we talk over and over again, they're asking the question, why are they doing this to us? Why? And you see, they're asking the question, where is our humanity? That's what they're asking, and that's the piece. That's why I'm saying we don't need to talk about the politics of this thing. We don't need to talk about your Common Core. We don't need to talk about your reforms. We need to ask you over and over and over again, the Secretary of the United States, Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, where's the humanity? We need to ask Barack Obama, the president, where's humanity? We need to ask Republican Senator Lamar Alexander, where is your humanity? And we need to ask it over and over again.
I'm going to take that issue up later on this summer. I've been promising people for a year and a half that I'm going to talk about neoliberalism. The answer to that question, every question you've ever had, lies within the neoliberalism ideology, theory, and practice. But that'll come later. The next case.
All right. The next case. And trust me, the stories matter. CNN, Fox, MSNBC, people kept saying, why aren't they covering you? I said, because they work for the other side. I said, look at who their sponsors are. Look who pays the bills. But the stories of the people matter, and they're powerful. So the next story is a 10-year-old boy by the name of Ben Rolls. And then mother contacts me when I said I was going to do the walk. And she said, are you going to walk through Maryland? And I said, yes, I am going to walk through Maryland. And she said, are you going to pass through Fredericksburg, Maryland? And I said, Mrs. Rolls, I'm not really passing to Fredericksburg, but I could come see it. And so I went to see. I went to see Cindy Stickland Rolls, the mother of Ben and the mother of Ben's wonderful sister, Grace. And I met this beautiful family of a special needs child. And Ben is a child who cognitively would be between the age of a year and a half and 2 years old. That's all dated in his IEPs, all documented. Ben is missing part of his brain. Ben has cerebral palsy. Ben is not verbal. Ben cannot hold a pencil. Ben cannot do any of the things that most children going to school can do. And when we see what happens to Ben, because his mother fills out the opt-out forms, fills out, I refuse the test, because you have to say you refuse it in Maryland. These politicians, these policymakers, these, I don't know what we want to call them, they play games. You can't say, I'm not taking the test. You can't say, I'm opting out. You can't say, refuse. They find some kind of term. But you use the right term. And in Maryland, it's, I refuse these tests for my child. And so they were supposed to honor that. That's her right. I don't understand how a parent can't be right. So what happens to Ben is this. Ben cannot read. Ben cannot pick out his name. If it was in front of him, he can't point to it. And when you look at his IEP, that's the individual education plan, the goals on that plan are for Ben to read critically. bend to write persuasive paragraphs, bend to read in between the lines, bend to pick out the main idea, bend to be able to give you significant details. James, Ben cannot do this. And the school district said, what happens, he must have the curriculum, not that's accessible to him, but the curriculum that's age-generated, not developmentally appropriated. Now, James, when you take a child that is at cognitively at less than 3 years old, and you demand from him a critical 10-year-old's curriculum, and you say, you must have that every day, do we not understand that we will frustrate Ben every day? And I want to get at the atrocity that happens next. Ben's mother said, do not test my son. You are driving my son insane. You cannot do this. You are hurting him. And what do? Somehow, when she's not looking, they take Ben and they put a test in front of him and they put paint on his hand. And somehow they're waiting for him to touch the paper because Ben moves his hands. They're not control. And as soon as his hand touches that paper, you know what happens, James? It can be graded. It can be scored. If it can be scored, then that means that Pearson gets paid. And you see, the 30 pieces of silver were paid. That test showed nothing but Ben's frustration. That curriculum shows nothing but Ben's frustration. It was the most evil thing that I have ever seen done to a child. And let me tell you something, Ben is a beautiful child. And we should be looking, when we look at a special needs child, we shouldn't be thinking what we can do for them. I'm going to tell you that I know why special needs children are going to be here. Are in our lives, it's to show our humanity. And you see, Fredericksburg, the District of Fredericksburg, the state of Maryland, the United States of America failed the humanity, God's humanity test by doing that to Ben. And that to me is a powerful stone, and I'm going to throw it in the face of every one of these Pearson giants, everyone achieves giant, No Child Left Behind giant, Race to the Top giant, Common Core giant. I'm going to remind them of their inhumanity time and time again.
To add to that, can the mother sue the district?
It's. I met quite a few parents in Maryland, and there are a number of them.
Specific parent, because she said, "I refuse to test for my son." Period. They what? Then, behind her back, against her direct orders, figure out a way, contrived a way, to be able to say he took the test so that Pearson can be paid, we can be in compliance. Obviously, to me, going back to my little law school experience and basic life experience, it was a violation of her rights and Ben's rights. Big time.
Exactly.
And so my question is, I mean, I'm sure she knows this, and I'm sure she's more angry than I am, and I'm damn angry at the story, and I even know the story. And I would hope that there are organizations there, nearby, that would come to her rescue and do the filing for her. Do not let them get away with this shit. My words, folks, not Jesse's. Okay. I'm done.
Sure. Cindy has gone to court. The judge ruled that she did not fully follow the procedures, the paper procedures, for refusing the test. That's what he ruled. She's still challenging them. She's appealing that. She also has a hearing on August 28th. The district has given her a hearing to determine if parents have the right to opt out. Did you hear that, James? We're going to give parents a hearing to determine that, do they have the right to refuse an academic test that they feel is harmful, not a medical test that might save a child's life, but an academic test that really does nothing, and especially for a child with cerebral palsy. That the very fact, and she's excited about this opportunity, but I'm stepping back and I'm saying, where is the humanity, America? Parents have the right. I can't even believe this is that I live in a democracy. That this is America. When a parent is told that they don't have the right to do this, and now we have a hearing to determine if the parents of Fredericksburg can opt out. It baffles my mind, James. I don't know if I'm living in the United States of America, that land of the dream. You know, I don't know if it's the land of the dream or the land of the nightmare, because I don't know who these people are that are driving.
It's the land of the nightmare. Let me say this, and we have to get to the rest of your stories. If you're up to it, let's follow this and do a repeat, or I don't say a repeat, let's follow this and do a show following the trial. Because this is a national question.
Right. I'm up to it, and I do want people to know that at every time, everybody that I'm meeting, every walk, I'm not doing a walk drive through. I'm making connections. I'm going back to Philadelphia for the United National Opt-Out Congress. I am writing. I'm reviewing Ben's IEP. I'm a PhD. Assessment is my area. I have looked at his IEP, his goals for his IEP, and I have told his mom they're inappropriate. Send me the whole IEP. I will write a letter and support you, and saying that this child should not be tested. Not only not be tested, he should not be exposed to a curriculum that frustrates him. So yeah, the fight, and we will follow that. We will follow it.
Okay, that's a done deal. You can tell her that.
I will, and to be a good guest. I think all these people would be good guests.
Absolutely. All right. You have another story or two that you want to relate?
Yeah. My final story, the final stone, and I do say these are stones, and David took 5 stones, because although David knew he had a faith in the Lord, he also thought about himself. He thought, what if I miss? What if I miss twice? What if I miss 3 times? What if I miss 4 times? No shepherd ever misses with 5 stones. My 5th stone is the story of Mount Holyoke's Gus Morales. Gus Morales is an armed service veteran. Gus Morales is a Hispanic male teaching in a Hispanic dominated district. Gus Morales is an exceptional teacher. You know it from his students, the way they talk about him. You know it from the things he does in his class. Gus Morales is exceptional in everything. But Gus Morales, like every good soldier, Gus Morales cannot be silent. He cannot be indifferent. So when the district started harassing the teachers in his school, Gus Morales stood up. Gus Morales, even though he wasn't tenured, Gus Morales said, look, give me that Union mantle. Let me lead the charge in the battle. I will take it and I will fight for you. And Gus Morales fought for his fellow teachers. And what they did was they dismissed him. They sent him a letter and said, you no longer, your contract, you will not be needed come September. And Gus Morales fought that. He fought it and fought it, and he won. And after they dismissed him, he won, and the district had to bring him back because the judges knew, the arbitrator knew this was nothing but garbage and trash. This was an inhumanity done to this teacher. We don't treat our veterans like this. But Gus, now we're a year later, because that's 2 years ago, and that was a year-long battle that Gus had to fight to get his job. Now we're back. And what does the school do? The state of Massachusetts decides they're going to take over Mount Holyoke, the whole district. And to get at Gus, they decide they will purge the school. So they can't be accused of going after the veteran, going after the Hispanic teacher, going after the community hero, the labor leader, the labor hero. So what they do is they say, we're going to lay off 100 teachers, and Gus is one of them there. And so when I was at, when at the Bats Congress, and I have known Gus, and we have talked about this, but at, and he was one of my heroes in my blog early on the walk. But there was Gus and I at the Bats Congress, and I let him know that I have your back, Gus. This is not over. We're fighting. But, I mean, where's the humanity when our veterans come back? And we want them. We want them to come back. And if they can pick up the mantle of being a teacher, isn't that what we want? I was taught by incredible World War II veterans. I wasn't taught by GI veterans from the Korean War and World War II. Oh, my God, I was taught by them. They inspired. They lifted me. Isn't this what we want?
Gus was on the show just recently while you were on your walk. And we talked about that. And hopefully we also will follow that story. Matter of fact, I am now committed to trying to follow Mount Holyoke, that whole fiasco there. I need to get more people that I can contact and rely on to give us good, accurate information so that I can get up to date on it. But definitely, we'll stay on that. You said you had five stories. You've only given us four. And I know that you missed one, and that happened to be about Jamal.
It was Jamal Bowman's Casas Middle School. That was in the Bronx. Jamal Bowman is an exceptional black principal in the Bronx. And his school is mainly a school of black children and Hispanic children. I couldn't find any white children in the school. His staff is primarily a staff of color. And Jamal, when Mark Mason said, we're going to march through the Bronx and we're going to go down the Grand Concourse, Jamal, he said, no, Jesse, I have a civil rights issue here in the Bronx that I need you to help me bring attention to. Our children need you. And so I'm already, the last thing I expected when I asked him, what's the civil rights issue? He said, the right to play. I said, wait a minute, Jamal, civil rights, it can't be the right to play. Explain this to me. He said, well, I'm going to play and recess and the things that keep children, all children, from going insane from after sitting 6 hours in their classroom. We need play. It's cognitively influential. Jamal Bowman is an intelligent, bright young principal who understands that young minds can grow without physical activity. And he's explaining to me, it's taken off the table in poor schools all across New York. And not only that, he says, I want you to meet David Rosen Garcia. And I said, David Rosen Garcia, tell me about him. He says, David has a civil rights law case against the city of New York because in Staten Island, In all white communities, the athletic programs after school, there's about 15 to 18 at affluent school districts and primarily all white school districts. And he said, do you know how many are at schools of color in the Bronx? And I said, I don't know, Jamar, tell me. He says, we're lucky to have six. We have five. And you see, we have to ask ourselves, if you're taking away play from a child, where's the humanity? If the discrepancy, it's not only the discrepancy about how much money you spend on the kid, it's not only the discrepancy of do you have the bells and whistles at your schools versus impoverished schools that don't have the computers, don't have the curriculum materials, don't have the art supply, don't have the paper. It's the inhumanity of saying that when you go to school, you will only be able to play five sports, five after-school activities, but you're better off brethren, you're better off students, you're more wealthy and powerful. Well, of course, they have 15 to 18. You see, it's inhumanity, stupid. And we don't need to be talking about test scores. What we need to be asking our policymakers every single day, our elected officials, our Board of Education people, our congressmen, our senators, our mayors, our governors, our councilmen. We need to ask them every single day, how can you let this inhumanity that you call education reform go? We need to ask them, where is your humanity? Because, James, on this walk, I have found the humanity of the powerful, the connected, and the influential missing.
You stated on your blog, well, yeah, you raised the question, and also a statement in terms of, it's not in the White House, it's not in the Congress of the United States, it's not in the governor's mansion, and I'll add, it's not in the state legislative bodies. It's not in the cities where you have mayoral control. It's not on the school boards that are bought and sold wholesale by the corporate state power elite. It has to be in the people. It has to be in the parent. You would hope that it's in the teachers across the board. But I question that these days. It has to be, and part of your walk, this came out, the earlier part of your walk, what I'm about to refer to, it has to be in the students, the ones that you just mentioned, the ones, I think, I can't remember now what city you were in, where the kid got up and he was saying that he was against what's going on, because he doesn't want it to happen to his own children. That was a statement that we had talked about here on the War Report, I don't know, months ago, when I said that, think about this, by 2016, there will be millions of students who are juniors and seniors in school now who will be 18. They will be able to vote. Those are the people that, when I say we, those of us who are fighting tooth and nail day and night to protect and perpetuate public education and keeping that in the hands of the public, not in the hands of the politicians and the corporation. We need those. And for 2020, we need those who are 14, 15, 16, who will be 18. We need their humanity to go up against the inhumanity of the power structure. You talked about that at one of your locations. And
Trenton, New Jersey.
Yes. And so there, to me, in lie, where if we are going to win this war, it will be with the 14, the 15, the 16, the 17, the 18 years old now. And come 2020, there will be millions, millions, tens of millions more of them. I think I'm preaching.
You've got it. No, you've got it, James. That young man, He thought I was worried. There was a young child, probably 18 years old, could have been 17, could have been 16. But I was at St. Joseph's Church in Trenton, New Jersey, and I was meeting with a youth group there, and talking about all this stuff can get you worried. And the young man looked at me and he said, "Listen, Dr. Turner, don't you worry about a thing. Because we are the meek, and we are the innocent, and we shall inherit everything. We shall be your lawyers, your judges, your mayors, your governors, your congressmen, your senators, and even your presidents, your CEOs. And when we assume that power, do you think for one moment that we would allow what they have done to us to happen to our children? I will promise you now that we will not allow this to happen." And you're right. And Malcolm X said, the ballot of the bullet. So I'm telling America, I have a theme every stop, everywhere I go. I say, no justice, no votes. If this is inhumane, then it's unjust. So no justice, no votes. No justice, no votes. 2016, I don't want to wait until 2020, James. I want to take it right back now, like Gus Morales says, take it back, take it all back. So in 2016, I want to bring a quarter of a million people to Washington, D.C., to occupy the people's capital. And I want to tell them there that there will be no more inhumanity. And we want them to know, no justice, no votes. When they go into that election cycle and they spend their billions and their trillions, and they, I want them to know that we will not vote for inhumanity.
Well spoken. I didn't know that you were a minister or a rabbi or what have you. You've been preaching quite forcefully today. You know, I'm always teasing you about being the optimist and me being the pessimist, and we sort of meet in the middle around being realist. And today, the passion is even higher than I've ever, I think, encountered. So that's why I'm teasing you about being the reverend, the minister, the preacher. And hopefully the flock gets listening.
I've been inspired by the people. I've done something that if you look at our old leaders, the Teddy Roosevelts, the Franklin Delano Roosevelts, the Abraham Lincolns, they got on trains and they went from down to down. They crossed the country. They listened to the people. Now, they made their speech, but after they made their little speech at a town, they were stuck there. And so they got to meet the people. So I've done what leadership should do. What leadership should do is meet the people. They shouldn't meet the people on TV. They shouldn't meet the billionaires, the zillionaires. They shouldn't be drinking the champagne and playing golf. And whatever they do in elite circles, they should be doing what real leaders do. They should be meeting with the people. And that's what I did, and the people inspire me.
Yeah, well, you certainly are demonstrating your level of inspiration here. Jesse, we got about 5 minutes left. I'll try and be that every listener and see if I can come up with some questions that represent what they may be thinking or should be thinking, and you can give me your elevator 30-second reply. To start with, the people who are waging this war, one question I got during the week was a question pertaining to Coleman, the architect of the Common Core, and that whole ilk. Are they pathological? That was one listener's or person who goes to our Facebook page. He was saying, they're all pathological. What do you say?
Well, if I made the analogy that the education policies of No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, and I would venture to say from what so far, what I've seen from every child that achieves, that I've been looking at the policies, and what I see is child abuse. Now, no abuser thinks they are abusing people, but every abuser is a pathological person. And so when I look at these people, they're so busy smiling and collecting the money. They're like the conquistadores come to mutilate, to pillage, and to rob our native people. That's who they're like. They can't see anything but the money and the power that they have. And I'll tell you, there is no glory in what they're doing. Maybe they think there's glory. There is no glory. But yes, they're pathological.
That question comes from a person who says that when you take a look at the CEOs, the power players, the billionaires, et cetera, egotistical, pathological. I agree with that statement, and I agree with your answer to the way in which I phrased it as a question. I have one question. You, Jesse, you are an advocate. You are I can't even think of all the things that you are. You're an activist, you're a researcher, you're a reporter of truth. Can we inspire others to be like you and have that package that you bring to the war? I know that's a totally philosophical question, unanswerable, but you are the solution if we could multiply you to 1 million, 10 million. Can we do it? Can we produce more Jessies?
First of all, we need to understand what inspired Jesse, what compelled Jesse to walk, what motivates me, what moves me. And James, it's my people. I'm in love with the American people. I'm in love of the dream that this nation could become. It's like Langston Hughes said, let America be America. And then he has that little piece where he says, well, America never was America to me, but he still says, let America be America. I've been inspired by the people because they're the ones that can let America be America. And all they need do is look in the mirror and realize we don't need a hero. We don't need a prophet. We don't need a Messiah to come. The people we have been waiting for, the person we have been waiting for, is the person in the mirror. Every person is a David. Every person can have 5 stones. Every person can slay the giant. That's what the ballot is about. I am inspired. I'm motivated. I'm in love with the American people. They can do it.
God, Jesse, you are so inspirational. Even me, the cynic. Nah, not quite me. I'm not there yet. But anyway, you're so inspirational. And thank you for being Jesse. Thank you for your efforts. Thank you for being on the War Report. Thank you for allowing us here to try and introduce you to hopefully thousands and then maybe millions as the inspiration. And one last comment here. Not too long ago, someone posted on Facebook, identify someone who can help lead a revolution that we need to save public education. I nominate you, Jesse Turner, as the person who can help lead us to a revolution. Jesse, our time is up. You and I have work to do. I'm dead serious about us following the family that is taking the state to court. I'm dead serious about following what's happening in Holyoke. So you will be back. And with that, folks, we have to say goodbye. But I hope you heard Jesse. You become inspired by him. But more importantly, or as importantly, pass this on to others. Tell them to listen to the show. Go to the archives. This was most inspirational. With that, I have to say goodbye. See you all next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.